Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 24, 2021. A South Sudanese medical doctor working for an international agency is killed in Unity State.
The South Sudan Doctors Union and the entire membership is giving a 72-hour ultimatum to the state authorities in order to investigate the killings and bring the culprits before a competent court of law.
And a Sudanese military commander appears at the International Criminal Court to answer charges of war crimes.
It is the opening of the confirmation of charges hearing in the case against Mr. Ali Abdurrahman. The hearing is planned or scheduled to last for 4 days.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The International Criminal Court in Hague has begun a hearing to confirm charges against Sudanese paramilitary commander Ali Mohammed Ali Abdurrahman, also known as Ali Kusheb, who has been indicted for war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. A spokesperson for ICC told South Sudan in Focus, the confirmation of the charges session will last for 4 days. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has details from Washington.
Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda called Ali Kusheb a willing and energetic perpetrator of crimes during 2003 and 2004 at the first presentation at the ICC's case against a suspect charged with involvement in crimes carried out by the Janjaweed militia in Darfur. Kusheb was arrested after he surrendered himself to the authorities in Central African Republic last year and was transferred to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. The court had issued an arrest warrant against Kusheb in April 2007 on 50 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Darfur under the rule of former President Omar al-Bashir. Fadi al-Abdullah, a spokesperson and head of public affairs at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, tells South Sudan in Focus the hearing is expected to last for 4 days.
It is the opening of the confirmation of charges hearing in the case against Mr. Ali Abdurrahman. The hearing is planned or scheduled to last for 4 days. The purpose of this hearing, which is not a trial, is to decide whether or not a trial will be held at a later stage. It's a preliminary hearing in which the judges will check the evidence of the prosecutor, will listen to the defense answers, and will listen also to the victims who are represented through their lawyers.
Al-Abdullah says the judges will then have 60 days to decide whether or not to confirm one or more of the charges.
And that means whether or not they believe that for each of the charges, the prosecutor has presented enough evidence to believe or to have substantial reasons to believe that Mr. Abdurrahman committed these crimes. And if one or more of the charges is confirmed, then the case proceeds to a trial. But if they reject all the charges, then the case may end at this stage.
Al-Abdullah says the judges may also decide to ask the prosecutor for additional evidence or suggest different legal characterization of certain elements of the case. But in the end, he says, the hearing will determine if some or all of the charges will be confirmed or not. Following Kusheb's arrest last year, the ICC released a statement saying Kusheb was one of the most senior leaders in the tribal hierarchy in the Wadi Saleh locality and member of the paramilitary group the Popular Defense Forces, and allegedly commanded thousands of Janjaweed militia from August 2003 until March 2004. He is alleged to have implemented the counterinsurgency strategy of the government of Sudan, and which resulted in the commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. Kusheb is accused of personally participating in some of the attacks against civilians between August 2003 and March 2004, including the killing of civilians, rape and torture, according to Al-Abdullah.
Recently, the ICC prosecutor had reduced the list of charges to 31 charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity, which includes different charges such as attacking civilians, rape, torture, pillaging, and other charges.
Kushaib has not entered a plea to the charges, but at a hearing last year, he told judges the allegations were untrue. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and his former defense minister, a state minister for interior, and a rebel commander are also accused of war crimes committed in Darfur. The ICC issued arrest warrants against all of them years back. Al-Abdullah says Ben Souda visited Sudan in October, urging Sudanese authorities to cooperate with the ICC on all five individuals.
Sudan has an obligation to cooperate with the ICC because of the resolution of the Security Council, which created this obligation for Sudan. And cooperating with the ICC means respecting the ICC founding treaty, the Rome Statute, which allows for different possibilities, such either surrendering the suspects against whom there is arrest warrants, or raising, for example, charges to the admissibility of the case based on the complementarity principle.
The principle of complementarity allows Sudan to submit a request to the ICC to try the accused at home. Al-Abdullah says if Sudan chooses to try Bashir and others, ICC judges will decide whether Sudan fulfills all the legal criteria for a competent tribunal. And if Sudan fails to do so, it must surrender the accused to the court in The Hague. Sudanese officials have reiterated their commitment to cooperating with the ICC, but have yet to agree with the court on a clear modality for trying the accused in Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, a civilian member of Sudan's Sovereign Council has resigned, citing interference from the military component of the transitional government. Aisha Said Musa accuses some military members who are part of the transitional government of national unity of sidelining civilians and making unilateral decisions on matters affecting the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Aisha Musa Said told reporters during a weekend media briefing in Khartoum she tendered her resignation as a member of the Sovereign Council because the military component of the Sovereign Council ignores the views of the other members of the council and makes unilateral decisions on several issues affecting the country, which she says is a violation of the constitution.
Ignoring our views and overriding constitutional powers has become a trait that cannot be ignored, to the extent that the civilian component within the Sovereign Council and all other levels of governance became just as a logistical executive body only. They don't participate in decision-making, but only accept what has been agreed upon earlier.
Musa was appointed one of the two female members of Sudan's Sovereign Council in October 2019. The council is comprised of 6 civilians and 5 military officials. The number was expanded to 14 following the signing of the Juba peace deal. Musa says one of the key tasks of the transitional period was to ensure justice is served for the families of the victims of the Sudanese revolution. But she says military leaders on the council have placed obstacles in the path of justice.
This period needs practical steps towards laying laws that guarantee justice and establishment of a professional constitutional court that is able to protect the constitution against all interference. We would like to see all working towards initiating a constitutional conference that will guarantee a permanent and a democratic constitution in the country.
Musa says for the past 2 years under the transitional government, the economy has deteriorated, affecting the lives of all Sudanese. She says the government is unable to eliminate individuals who worked in the former administration of Omar al-Bashir, people who, she says, are still working against the development of this country.
Our country's infrastructure and the whole service delivery system has deteriorated as never before, and the government has failed to relieve the suffering from the Sudanese citizens. This weakness that paralyzed the country's institutions has led to the extent of insecurity and inability to rationing and monitoring of the security forces.
With tears in her eyes, Musa offered her apologies to the Sudanese people, saying IDPs and refugees must be able to return to their homes, people's living conditions must improve, and justice must be served.
I present my apology to all Sudanese women who are still facing exclusion from participating in the decision-making process. My apology to all mothers of martyrs, wounded revolutionaries, missing individuals, and their families. My apology to all students, children, people with disabilities, and elderly, prisoners, and sick people, whom I have been following their files with deep concern.
Musa encouraged Sudanese to continue with peaceful protests until serious reforms take place. Last week, Sudanese Attorney General Tajasir al-Hibir resigned from his post, citing interference from what he called an authorized government agencies in the public's prosecution's office, which he called a clear violation of the law. Sudan's Chief Justice Nemat Abdullah Muhammad Khair was also removed from her post last week by the Sovereign Council without explanation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba, where some South Sudanese doctors are threatening to go on strike if the government does not take appropriate steps to apprehend and punish the killers of an aid worker with the International Rescue Committee. The acting chairperson of the South Sudan Doctors Union says doctors have given the government 72 hours to swiftly investigate the killing and bring the culprits to book. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In a statement issued late on a Sunday, Alan Nadau, the UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says Dr. Louis Edward was killed inside a healthy facility in Ganiel Payam in Unity States, Panyijar County, on a Friday evening. Nadau says that at almost the same time, an International Rescue Committee or IRC convoy, including an ambulance that was carrying 10 aid workers, was shot at by unknown gunmen on the outskirts of Gual Village, southeast of Koch Town, Unity State. The humanitarian aid workers managed to escape the attack. Nadau called on government and communities to protect aid workers across the country. Carol Sekewa, country director for the IRC, confirmed a staff worker was killed. She says investigations are going on but declined to comment further. Dr. Anthony Garang, acting chairperson of the South Sudan Doctors Union, says union members believe their colleague was killed in cold blood.
The South Sudan Doctors Union and the entire membership is giving a 72-hour ultimatum to the state authorities in order to investigate the killings and bring the culprits before a competent court of law. If nothing happens within this period of time, all doctors and allied health professionals are prepared to lay down their tools and go on a strike to demand for justice and protection of healthcare workers across the country.
In recent months, several humanitarians and health workers have been threatened, beaten, arrested, detained, tortured, or killed in Lekki, northern Bahr el Ghazal, and western Bahr el Ghazal states, along with the Rouen administrative area, according to the Doctors' Union. Speaking at the same news conference with the Doctors' Union, the Undersecretary at the Ministry of Health, Dr. Mayen Machut, said the government is doing all it can to track down the killers and assured the union the law is being exercised to address the issue.
We are disturbed and we are very shocked and very unhappy. But the case in the hands of the law. The state, Unity State, is doing its best to investigate and find out exactly the facts, what happened that led to the loss of the life of a hardworking doctor.
In a statement released over the weekend, the Doctors' Union said the medical fraternity is disappointed in state authorities for ignoring repeated calls for protection of health workers and said the union and its allied professionals will no longer tolerate violence against health workers. Babiker John, chairperson of the South Sudan Medical Laboratory Professional Union, says his union stands behind the doctors' union.
The South Sudan Medical Laboratory Professional unconditionally and totally support the South Sudan Doctor Union in their quest for fairness and justice in our line of practice as we hold on directives as we stand in solidarity with the colleagues at the Doctor Union.
Dr. Garang says the doctors' union will consult with all doctors, NGOs and authorities on options to boycott or withdraw from any state or community that shows hostility towards medical professionals and to agree on new terms and conditions for deployment of healthy personnel to provide services at community levels. Panyijar County Commissioner William Gadjik also says efforts are underway to establish the facts surrounding the doctor's death. He says it comes at a time when an estimated 83,000 people are entirely reliant on aid support from non-governmental organizations to access nearly all basic needs.
We are lacking of secondary health care in Panyijar, because what we have, in Panyijar, it is a primary health care. And that primary health care is not enough. It's based in Gangyel and Nyal. So another issue is anger. The food is not enough for them, because people are now coming home from exile. The people who are in Khartoum, in Bantu, in Wau, in Juba, in Uganda, they are now back to their home.
Dr. Edward is the second aid worker providing healthy services killed in South Sudan since the start of this year alone. Another healthy professional working with the Court 8 was killed in eastern Equatoria State about 2 weeks ago. No one has been arrested in that case. Two aid workers have been killed this year in South Sudan, according to the UN. Since 2013, 126 aid workers, mostly South Sudanese, have been killed in the line of duty. The recent attacks on aid workers follow warnings from some community youth who have accused humanitarian organizations of not recruiting locals in their areas of aid operations. Despite the increasing attacks on aid workers, the humanitarian situation continues to remain dire. An estimated 7.2 million people, representing 60% of the population across the country, face crisis levels of food insecurity from April this year, according to the UN Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan is sending back COVID-19 vaccines. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what improvements have you seen in your community over the past year?
I'm seeing infrastructures and services like water, electricity, at least now, alhamdulillah. Because like in 2 years back, we are getting water from the well. And now we have tap water.
Not so much in my community where I come from. Not so much. But I only see people are venturing into business. People are learning business skills every time.
People those days didn't take their children to school. But nowadays, you can see that all people are willing to take their children to school. And also, there's some development of the road constructions. There are also buildings around our places.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. South Sudan's National Task Force on COVID-19 says it's sending back 72,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccine to the COVAX facility to be used by other countries that need the doses before it expires. The Undersecretary in South Sudan's Health Ministry says the task force will keep about 60,000 doses until July 18 when the vaccine expires. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
South Sudan received 132,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine in late March from COVAX, a global coalition that works to ensure fair and equitable access of COVID-19 vaccines around the world. Dr. Mayen Machot, Undersecretary in South Sudan's Health Ministry, says after discussing the matter with the World Health Organization last week, the ministry decided to give back some of the doses before they expire.
We don't want to run the risk of expiring here in our hands. It will be accounted for. So we are committing back an amount of 72,000 doses so that they are safe, kept for us, used by somebody who can deploy these doses in 1 week. And then once we finish with our 60,000, which we actually already very well ahead, we think we're going to finish that, then we just get it back from the circulation.
Machot says the COVAX facility sent back a letter saying it is happy with the arrangement so as not to waste the doses. Aside from the slow response from the public to take the vaccines, Machot says there were delays by Parliament to approve the vaccine's use and some time was spent on training the vaccinators. He says the ministry also faces challenges in distributing the vaccine to other states.
We are struggling economically, and this means it is labor intensive. It is an emergency vaccination. We have problems of funding the deployment itself. We are actually tightening our belts. And that's why, hopefully, in the next 2 weeks, the 60,000 we have will be dispersed all over the country, all the states. And with this, that in the next 2-3 weeks, they must finish all that we are giving them, so that we don't waste vaccine. It's a valuable vaccine.
Dr. John Ramono, the Director General for Preventive Health Services at the Health Ministry and a member of the COVID-19 Task Force, says more South Sudanese need to take the vaccine.
The data we have is that we have 7,996 individuals receive their first dose of AstraZeneca. Out of this, 35.6% of the projected healthcare workers have been vaccinated. Out of 4,020 healthcare workers, we have 1,431 received their first dose. And the vaccination is still continuing. With this figure, 7,996, round it to 8,000, it means you are remaining with 116,000.
So we are going 116,000.
Dr. Ramona says some 8,000 people should soon be taking the second dose of the vaccine. Dr. Angela Guop, Director for Emergency Preparedness and Response at the Health Ministry and a member of the COVID-19 Task Force, says the team had earlier prioritized the health workers and the elderly, then opened vaccinations to the public with the expiration date fast approaching. But Dr. Guop says many people are still reluctant to take the vaccine.
One of the major challenges that is raised by the citizen is these negative videos in the social media. So there are some videos with a scientific, you know, explanation. We have assembled those videos for sure. They are with us. Whereby some people say this vaccine is not even a vaccine. Something else is just, genetic materials for the virus. It doesn't protect people. So this is one. Number two, a concern that also have been raised that this vaccine causes infertilities, as that means people will not produce after some years to come, which is not true.
Guop says the technical team from COVID Task Force is doing its best to educate the public about the importance of taking the vaccine. He urges everyone from 16 and above to get vaccinated for their own health and safety. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still on COVID, some teenagers and adults who received COVID-19 vaccines experienced heart inflammation. A U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention Advisory Group said it is recommending further study of the rare condition. Reuters' Brian Wood reports.
A statement dated May 17th from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said some teens and young adults, mostly male, had developed an inflammation of the heart muscle called myocarditis after receiving their vaccine. The CDC added that the condition often goes away on its own, and the number of cases so far have not been cause for major concern. They did not say how many people had been affected, but said cases typically occurred within 4 days after receiving mRNA vaccines without specifying which ones. In April, Israel's health ministry started examining similar cases tied to Pfizer's vaccine. It is yet to draw any conclusions. Neither Pfizer nor Moderna responded immediately to requests for comment on Saturday.
Ending the COVID-19 pandemic and preventing future pandemics is expected to dominate discussions during this week's 74th World Health Assembly, the decision-making body of the World Health Organization. The session will also address other pressing global health issues. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The 2021 World Health Assembly will be held virtually from tomorrow, May 24th through June 1st. This, in and of itself, is aimed at sending a strong message that it still is not safe for large groups of people to gather physically. More than 2,750 people so far have registered to attend the virtual event. WHO declared the COVID-19 outbreak a pandemic and a global international public health emergency on March 11, 2020. Since then, COVID-19 cases have increased 40-fold to 162 million, including more than 3.3 million deaths. Discussions on a so-called pandemic treaty to better prepare for and prevent global infectious outbreaks is expected to take center stage at the Global Assembly. WHO Chief Legal Officer Stephen Solomon says drafting a treaty would be a long process. He says delegates have not decided whether negotiations on a treaty should be started. He says a legally binding pandemic convention would cover both substantive issues, which include equitable sharing of materials, such as vaccines and diagnoses, and structural ones.
Structurally, you know, the elements that often comes up is issues of enforcement mechanisms, compliance mechanisms, monitoring mechanisms, incentives and disincentives. There's clearly issues of governance and how that would work under treaty institutions and financing.
The Assembly will face the largest agenda ever over the coming 8 days, with more than 72 global health issues under examination. Questions of vaccine equity will be central to these discussions. Wealthy countries are making great strides in vaccinating their populations and returning to a semblance of normal life, but poor countries are not. WHO warns vaccine inequity threatens ending the pandemic and global recovery from the pandemic. As in previous years, the issue of granting Taiwan observer status at the WHA will come up for debate at the opening session. China claims Taiwan is one of its provinces and has blocked Taiwan's participation since 2016. Under Beijing's One China policy, the Chinese Communist Party asserts sovereignty over Taiwan. This year, 13 WHO member states, including the United States, have called for Taiwan to be allowed to take part in proceedings. They say Taiwan has great insight on tackling the pandemic and would have a lot to contribute. Other significant issues to be addressed include the eradication of polio, speeding action on antimicrobial resistance, and considering WHO's global strategy on health, environment, and climate change. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all we prepared for you today. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with Kennedy Khamis singing about marriage.
Napanaga nabunda. Aha! Yena nago. Yena nago. Napanaga nabunda. Yena nago.
Yena nago.
Yena nago.
Yena nago. Napanaga nabunda. Yena nago.
Amor contigo. Pasi amor contana. Dengar tak kini soso. Napanaga nabunda.
We've been listening to Kennedy Khamis singing about marriage. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
dakuli apokabuse.
Kalala kalamulo. Yeah.